Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Allergies to foods like nuts, milk, wheat, and seafood are on the rise, and they can be life-threatening. As New Mexico students settle into a new school year, what are teachers and school staff doing to look out for all children? Do your kids have severe allergies? How does that go for them at school? Do you have access to the life-saving medications you need, like EpiPens or the generic versions? We want to hear from you this hour. Call 277-5866, or you can email us at letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to welcome in the studio this morning Ivy Rizzo, a mother and advocate with the Anaphylactic Food Allergy Support Group of New Mexico.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Good morning, thanks. We also have Stephanie Collins, a mother of two kids with severe food allergies and a native New Mexican.
Good morning.
Also in the studio is Dr. Richard Walks, an allergist with Breathe America here in Albuquerque.
Good morning.
So first, I want to hear a bit about each of your experiences with these allergies. So Ivy, let's start with you. What does a really bad day look like for your kids?
About last summer, we believed that my younger son had outgrown his tree nut allergy. And so we went to Children's Hospital Colorado, and they gave him 1/15 of pistachio, powdered pistachio.
Like as a test?
Mm-hmm, to see if he had outgrown. And he went into anaphylaxis. And then it actually required more than one dose of epinephrine. So for me, a bad day is any day that we have anaphylaxis. But there's also, besides safety, there's inclusion. So another bad day might be a day where we can't do what other people are doing because of our food allergies.
And I want to get more into that. But first, just a definition. What is anaphylaxis for those out there who may not be familiar?
I'm going to pass that to the doctor.
Yeah, Dr. Walks.
Anaphylaxis is a severe reaction where there's a release of histamine secondary to a exposure to one of the foods that they're allergic to. Food allergy is only one thing that can create an anaphylactic reaction, but it's probably one of the most common as well. With that release of histamine, there can be multiple serious reactions and life-threatening reactions, including drops in blood pressure, throat closing off due to edema, severe asthma exacerbations, hives, sudden onset GI, such as vomiting or diarrhea. And it can occur anywhere within minutes of the exposure to several hours afterwards.
So anaphylaxis, that full body reaction, right?
It's basically more than one organ system reacting at once.
Okay. And Ivy, you mentioned using the epinephrine. Stephanie, would you give us an idea what does a bad day look like for your kids with anaphylaxis? And then what is it like to deliver that epinephrine?
So we had to do that around Christmas time. And they ate nuts by accident. We didn't realize something contained nuts.
And you have two?
I have twins, twin boys. And they both had a piece of this cake. And I heard it's very prevalent around the holidays for people not to realize things have nuts in them and they end up in the ER or urgent care. They say the statistics of anaphylaxis goes up around the holidays. So anyway, my children had accidentally ingested nuts, and they both have asthma. They started with the coughing, and they were scratching their skin where they were getting hives. And I had actually not given them epinephrine before. So I had called Ivy because I was very nervous. And I said, hey, this is going on. I know I need to give them epinephrine. Just talk to me while we go through this. And I was talking to my kids. And I actually have Avacue, which talks you through giving the shot.
And that's a different type of auto-injector, right?
And I love it because it helped me focus and just actually give the epinephrine into my children. And they were aware, and it was pretty sad because they were saying, just give it to me, Mom. I don't want to die. And I had given them Benadryl first, and I know not to give Benadryl, but I just did because I thought maybe it was like a tiniest piece of nut. But anyway, they kept progressing, and I knew I needed to. So I took them. This was at Costco. I took them down an aisle where there weren't many people, pulled down their pants. They still had their underwear on. And we injected their thigh, their upper thigh, with the epinephrine. And just, it was amazing. Immediately, Miles, his hives started to go away and his coughing stopped. And then I looked over at my other son, and he had hives growing around his mouth. And then I gave him his epinephrine. And it just started to clear away too. And I thought, oh my goodness. And they both looked at me and we all had tears in our eyes. And we said, oh mom, that wasn't as bad as I was imagining. I was imagining a giant needle and it hurting. And they were just, I was just so proud of them. And a stranger walked down the aisle, cause we were all doing a group hug. And he said, I'm just sending love and peace to you guys, whatever you're going through. So he kind of understood like something medical was going on. So, yeah.
Wow. I feel like that might be rare to get support of a stranger.
Right.
That's really good.
No, it was really beautiful. And then the kids felt love too, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
And Ivy, talk a little bit more about that. So you're an advocate with mm-hmm. the support group, and how do you talk through people when they're thinking about using an EpiPen for the first time?
Yeah, so I always tell them my experiences are the same as Stephanie's, that it works right away, and that my kids have said, oh, it didn't hurt that bad. Mm-hmm. And so, and then I say, you know, it's going to save a life. So, you know, you want to save your kid's life rather than wait it out. And I always advocate having something called an action plan from your allergist, because I'm a therapist, actually, so I'm pretty good at talking people through things. But when our brains are in fear, we go into this mode where we don't think very well. When we're in shock, we go into flight or fight. So it's nice to have this action plan, which is like an easy flow chart. All kids with life-threatening food allergies should have one. All schools should make sure that if they have a kid with life-threatening food allergies, they have an action plan in place. APS has this as part of their protocol for even having epinephrine at the schools. And the action plan tells you exactly what to do step by step. So if you're in confusion and fear, because your child's saying, I can't breathe, or your child's maybe having symptoms that you're not sure about, you have a flow chart that you can go through and be like, okay, I'm seeing this. Now I need to use epinephrine. Now I need to call 911. Now I need to make sure that my door is unlocked, whatever. You have an action plan. And anybody can use that.
Dr. Walks, yeah.
In addition, with the epinephrine, either through the IVIQ or the EpiPen, not only the action care is incredibly important, because when you're in that situation, you don't think straight. I've had several patients who have given the EpiPen before but still call and not know if they should give it or how to give it, even with the IVIQ, which talks you through it. My advice typically to patients, because the big question that always comes from patients or parents is, is it time to give the EpiPen? Do I need to give it? Like we were saying earlier, that I'll try Benadryl first. Should I do it? And one of the biggest misconceptions about epinephrine is that because it's an injection and because it's an emergency medicine, that it's a last resort medicine, and that it is not. It is actually the first resort medicine. If somebody's showing evidence of an anaphylactic reaction, my advice is. If you're thinking that it might be time for the EpiPen, that means it's time for the EpiPen. And to use it when they don't need it is a very low risk. So they might have an increased heart rate. They might feel lousy for a few minutes while the medicine's coursing through them. It's better to have those feelings if you don't need them than to not use it when you do.
If you have a student with a severe food allergy, have you brought it up with their school? What kinds of responses have you gotten? Have you been able to access EpiPens or other life-saving medications? We want to hear from you this hour. Call 277-5866 or 1-877-899-KUNM. You can also tweet at us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So as folks head into the school year earlier this month, there's been a shortage of EpiPens, which the FDA is grappling with. And so some really recent news. Last week, the FDA approved the first generic. And this week, they said they're extending the expiration time for adult EpiPens. Dr. Walks, can you shed some light? What does this all mean for people trying to get those medications?
Right. And talking as a parent of a food allergic patient, I'm on the wait list as well for my EpiPen.
Wow.
Extension of the expiration date. Basically, a lot of people don't realize that on your EpiPen and AVEQ, there is an expiration date. It tells you after what time the EpiPen is no longer, supposedly not, no longer active. It's not dangerous if you use one after the expiration date that the medication would be dangerous, but it might not be as effective. So that's why you generally don't want to use it beyond its expiration date. The extension only is with specific lots, and if you go online, you can find those lots and compare it to the lot number on your EpiPen.
And not the children's version,
not
is
yet.
That right?
Not yet, and that's because of the size of the dose. It may denature faster, so that does raise additional concerns. The FDA making it a little bit longer does help. Unfortunately, the information we're getting from the makers of EpiPen is minimal to know exactly when it's going to be coming out fully anymore. The other options, there is the AVEQ, which can be is available. And
that's just a different brand?
Correct. There's the generic that was just approved, but there's also Adrenaclick and AVEQ, which are two additional self-injecting epinephrine doses. As they've been mentioning, the AVEQ is probably the main competitor to EpiPen right now and has some advantages, in my opinion, over the EpiPen. It's just not as well known. Most educators or school nurses are a little more familiar with the EpiPen so that they're a little bit more comfortable when they see it. But the AVEQ is a great alternative.
So what are those benefits, and does it work the same way?
Absolutely. It's a self-injector. One of the benefits is it does talk you through how to use it. We have a sample here.
Oh, so Ivy brought one in. Can we hear it? Can you hold it up to the mic?
If you are ready to use, pull off red safety guard.
So we're not going to do that right now. Right.
Right.
Replace the outer case.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now this is an actual AVEQ. Both AVEQ and EpiPen come with trainers inside the packet generally when you get a 2-pack. And I recommend that everybody use the trainers, get instructed by their physician, their allergist, their pharmacist on how to use them. And then not only should the parent be aware of it, but as soon as you feel comfortable that your child is mature enough to know how to follow those instructions, that you start teaching your child how to do it, because you won't always be there when a reaction occurs. When they start hitting the higher levels of school, junior high and high school, a lot of schools allow the students to carry their own EpiPen. It doesn't have to be at the nurse's office or in the classroom anymore, that they can carry it with them. So you want them to be comfortable not only carrying it, but being able to recognize the symptoms and apply the epinephrine when they need it.
Stephanie, do you have any thoughts on that? So your kids are 7, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you thinking about, you know, eventually transitioning them to knowing how to do it themselves?
Miles actually practices himself. He has the trainer and he feels pretty confident in practicing. And we've talked about making a little YouTube video, but we haven't gotten around to doing it yet. His twin brother, he's a little more shy about the whole thing. But I think he would be, willing to practice as well if I push it a little bit more.
And so we heard those instructions from the AVEQ, but I just want to be like explicit about how it works. So you really just like firmly put it on the thigh, right?
It depends on which of the products.
Okay.
The EpiPen does need a little bit more force and almost a jabbing motion to actuate it. The AVEQ, one of the advantages, in my opinion, is you just need to place it on the thigh and push down. It takes a little bit less effort. Another benefit of the AVEQ is the needle itself is self-retracting. So after it injects the medication, the needle's in the leg for less than a second, and it is retracted back into the device. So in my opinion, it's a little bit safer from a needle standpoint as well.
that's great information out there for school staff and nurses. Let's take a quick break. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866, or you can email us your comment, letstalk@kunm.org. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9. We'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Glassrite, New Mexico's own, since 1984, manufacturing and installing vinyl replacement windows, built in New Mexico for our unique climate, plus wood-clad windows by Gerald Wen. On Gibson or at glassrite.com, Glassrite supports KUNM.
During Leonard Bernstein's final days, his former assistant Charlie Harmon went to visit.
When I walked into his bedroom, he looked so frail. That's when I realized that I was there to say goodbye.
Bernstein's last days and his final request for Charlie Harmon on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today is life-threatening food allergies in schools. Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We have an email comment from Rebecca. She says her two kids, who are 4 and 5, can't digest soy or dairy proteins. She says she feels lucky because they don't have anaphylactic reactions, but she still worries about cross-contamination at school, especially as the kids start at new schools and teachers aren't as aware. But she says her kid's teacher has stayed in constant contact and has taken his health very seriously. So let's talk about how schools and teachers can respond. Ivy, what kind of accommodations are helpful for kids as they're entering school? I mean, your kids are in preschool or kindergarten, right?
Yeah, so there's kind of two ways that it can be documented and gotten on paper and everybody can get on the same page. There's something called an IEP, which is kind of like an individualized health plan. And then there's something called a 504 plan. And just to piggyback on that email comment, there are a lot of food issues like F pies and celiacs and intolerance.
What is F pies?
It's actually a fairly rare, but it can be a deadly condition that also is caused by food. It's more gastrointestinal, but it can be extremely serious. So there's all of these things that kind of come under this category of food allergies. But when we are talking about food allergies today, we're talking about anaphylactic food allergies. That is not to say that those other conditions are not as difficult. They can be extremely difficult. And so with those conditions, most of those are going to go under an IEP, which is an individualized health plan. Fortunately, food allergies are covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act, so we can do a 504 plan. And both of those plans are extremely helpful for getting all teachers, principals, nurse staff on board with what to do and what needs to be done as far as prevention, recognition of symptoms, and response to symptoms. And the 504 is legally binding, so it's a great thing to get in place at the beginning of the school year. Yeah.
And what kinds of accommodations are those?
Things like making sure kids are going to be safe on field trips, making sure everybody knows where the emergency medication is going to be. For example, we don't want medication locked in a classroom if the teacher is out to lunch, right? Because what if the kid has an anaphylactic reaction in the cafeteria and they have to go searching for the keys? Things like bullying could be included in the 504 plan. Kids with food allergies are 40% more likely to be bullied because food is kind of a funny thing to be allergic to, you know, in quotes. It's like if I was to tell you I'm allergic to air. Some people have never heard of food allergies or don't understand that it could be life-threatening, so their initial reaction is to laugh. And when parents are laughing about it or parents are complaining about it, kids hear that. And then it becomes bullying. So we could have that in a 504. Teachers will make sure that bullying doesn't happen or will address bullying when it happens.
So just really being extra aware and intentional, mm-hmm. It sounds like. Let's go to a listener call. Caitlin in Albuquerque, what did you want to add to the conversation?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what would you like to add?
I would like to add, I have two children with nut allergies. And I wanted to suggest, we have old expired EpiPens, really old, that we're not comfortable using anymore. And I have my children use those to practice giving, like in an orange. I have them give the shot in an orange. And that seems to give them an idea of what it feels like when the EpiPen is actually injected instead of just using the trainer.
Thank you for that. There's a lot of nods here in the studio. That sounds like a great strategy for training. Thanks for that, Caitlin. And Stephanie, so Ivy was just mentioning that there can be some skepticism or pushback from other parents or teachers. What have you experienced as far as that, some of that skepticism?
So younger people or people around my age, not much older. I noticed with older family members, it wasn't prevalent back in the day when they were in school. So I've had people tell me it's not real, or it's not something that they had heard of back when they were in school. So they question if it's something that's real. With friends and family, people have been pretty wonderful with us because they love my boys, they love us, so they want to help the best they can. A lot of times friends will say, hey, this has nuts in it. I want you to be aware my kid has this with nuts. And that's usually pretty good. And we'll keep wipes, and if we're all playing together, and have them wipe their hands. So we've been lucky that we've had helpful friends and family.
And that question of, oh, is this real? This wasn't around when I was a kid. I mean, that's real, because the trends really show that they're increasing, that food allergies are increasing. Dr. Walks, what can you tell us about that?
There's definitely been an increase over the last 15, 20 years in the incidence of food allergy and allergy in general. There are a lot of theories behind that. I don't think any of them have been truly proven. But regardless of the reasons why, there's definitely been an increase. And that has led to that disbelief from older generations or shelter generations that might feel that it's not real. There have been a lot of issues with schools. Luckily, over the last 10 years or so, I've seen a much, much better understanding from the schools. I think the publicity of it has helped schools understand. I still don't think they get it completely. They'll do things, in my opinion, they say, oh, well, we've got a peanut-free table. And I say to myself, well, on one level, that's great that they're recognizing it, but that doesn't help the milk allergic patient or the egg allergic patient. In addition, by having a peanut-free table, you're also singling out these children. And a lot of them I've found don't like to sit there because they want to sit by their friends, or they want to not make it publicly known or obvious that they have these allergies. One thing that I've been pushing for years, but I've yet to have a school take me up on it, is instead of having a peanut-free table, why not have a peanut table? If your child wants to have peanut butter that day, they can go sit where they want. That gives them the choice of where they want to sit, as opposed to the food allergic patient who doesn't.
So we have another guest on the line. Emma Clapp grew up in Albuquerque and developed a shellfish allergy in high school. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So how did you adjust to suddenly having to be careful about shellfish at what age was that?
I was 16.
What was that like, adjusting to that in school as a high schooler?
Yes, so definitely. I developed this life-threatening shellfish allergy when I was 16 at a high school dance, of all places. Was the first time I had an anaphylactic reaction. And one, just being at my school, being sort of in that limelight, was horrifying on the one hand. On the other hand, it was good, because it became pretty apparent to people, this is real, she has an allergy. News definitely spread through the school pretty quickly that this was something I was going through. Adapting to that change was definitely interesting, though, learning how to have you know, carry around my EpiPen. I was older, so I was able to actually have it with me at school, and I learned how to use it and go through that process. And I taught some of my best friends as well. But it was definitely a change going from, you know, being able to eat, touch, smell anything, not even think about it remotely, to suddenly kind of flipping that switch and reading labels on everything, wiping down surfaces, suddenly having such a shift in my mindset.
We are talking about food allergies in schools today. Have you or your child experienced anaphylactic reactions to foods? What questions do you have about it? What's confusing to you? What is that like in school if you have kids in school with severe food allergies? You can call 277-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. Or you can leave us a comment on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So, Emma Clapp, you developed this shellfish allergy in high school. So, tell us what it's like physically to have to give yourself an EpiPen shot.
So, I've fortunately only had to give myself one EpiPen shot. And that was after a reaction in which I actually didn't consume anything. I think I touched a surface and then touched my eye. And it was pretty immediate that I started feeling these anaphylactic symptoms. And I was at the gym, so I went to my car and called my mom, kind of figured out the whole how am I going to get where I need to go situation, and then used the EpiPen. And it was always something that seemed very scary in my mind, but I think when you're in that moment and you're thinking, okay, it's either, you know, stab myself with this EpiPen or potentially die here alone in my car, it's very quick to kind of make the decision to use the EpiPen. And as other people have been saying, it started to work almost immediately, which was such a relieving thing. And in a weird way, as someone with a life-threatening food allergy, I'm really glad I had that experience, because now I know and I'm not as afraid to use my EpiPen.
And what about socially? I mean, you're dealing with this new restriction in the sort of high peer pressure environment of high school. What was that like?
Mm-hmm. I think that the pressures, fears, and frustrations felt by students with life-threatening food allergies are often overlooked or misunderstood. I think that students with life-threatening food allergies are constantly thinking about them, and I don't know that our peers or teachers or faculty at the school necessarily recognize that. For me, it was, you know, every snack, every surface, every table that I went to where maybe somebody in like a shared common space had been eating something, I was constantly running through my head, okay, well, what was here? You know, if I touch it, what will that be like? And so it's something that was continuously on my mind in high school and still is now. But I think, you know, especially in high school, especially being 16, that's the time when you really don't want to stand out. You don't necessarily want to be unique. You want to really fit in with the group norms. And so having a life-threatening food allergy makes that really challenging, because all of a sudden there's this thing that makes you really different. And I think there were many times, instead of saying, oh, I can't eat at this place or do this thing due to my life-threatening food allergy, I would sort of make up an excuse for another reason. The number of times I've said, oh, you know, I actually just ate, I continuously say that still to this day, because I think it's uncomfortable sometimes to bring awareness to the fact that you have this thing that is so detrimental and deathly.
Thanks for that insight, Emma. If you would stay on the line, maybe we can get a listener question to you at some point. And we do have an email comment from David. He says he would be more interested in prevention of allergies. He's concerned that teaching kids to use EpiPens will just make them more comfortable injecting illegal drugs. Is this a concern for you? This concern about familiarity with needles? And are there preventative measures that parents can take so kids don't develop allergies? Dr. Walks, you want to take this?
First of all, personally, I don't have a concern about a familiarity with needles, because it is not frequently used. I think if a like Caitlin was saying, she's used it once. And having it there as a relief for an anaphylactic reaction, it's not a pleasurable situation. And the medication, although makes you start to feel better, also doesn't make you feel good either. It just makes you feel better, which in itself makes you feel good.
It's kind of like an adrenaline rush. Is that true?
That's exactly what it is. It's a rush of adrenaline at that point, but it's short-lived. So when it comes to prevention, I absolutely agree that what we've talked about here today is what to do if you have a reaction. But more important is prevention. And there's nothing you can really do for the most part to prevent getting a food allergy. But once you have one, understanding what you're allergic to, knowing how to read labels, ask questions, not being afraid if you're in a restaurant to ask the waiter, tell them about your food allergy, ask them what's in the foods that you're ordering. And if you get the feeling they don't know what it is, you make sure you ask the next person up, the manager, the chef, whoever you need to. If you still don't get a good answer, you shouldn't eat there. So,
Ivy, yeah.
I appreciate that concern that he has. But I would say that we actually have the opposite problem with our population, where kids have developed needlephobia at a young age who have food allergies. And so we want them to have a familiarity. We want them to take the medication very seriously. I've never met a kid who doesn't. But what we see instead is that they have this huge fear of needles because they're afraid of that. And we are actually having we're partnering with Child Life from UNM, and we're going to have a needle clinic. It's called, I think, Needle Clinic, this fall, where the kids get to go in the afternoon, and these child psychologist counselors help them to figure out, oh, okay, this is what needles are for. This is what needles do. Because to them, it's like, you know, in their mind, it's just a big sharp object that they get at shots, you know, at shot time. So I actually work with my kids. We watch YouTube videos around, they need to know about IVs as well, because if you have an anaphylactic reaction, there is a chance that at the ER you may have to have an IV, and epinephrine can cause vasoconstriction, so it can be hard to get an IV. So having them
meaning your veins get small and tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, one thing we had talked about epinephrine before and how wonderful it is. Another thing people should know is that it can be given every 5 minutes. That's how safe it is. I often hear from people like, "Well, I don't want to hurt them, or it could cause a problem with them." Luckily, epinephrine is one of the safest medicines that we have. The auto injectors measure out how much you're going to get, and it's a fairly low dose, so it can be given every 5 minutes.
Has your child experienced anaphylactic reactions to foods? If you have a student with a severe food allergy, what do you wish other school staff or parents would understand about that? Give us a call, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. Let's go to the phone lines. Carmen is on the line from Rio Rancho. Welcome to the program, Carmen.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have two children, one an 11-year-old who's just started middle school, and then same thing, twin boys, but only one of them has a nut allergy. And I was calling because I have to use the Affordable Care Act for my health insurance. And I'm really nervous about what it means for me and other families, or families who are on Medicaid, and the cost. Just a couple of years ago, when I had to redo my daughter's prescription because it was expired, the cost was almost $800 to fill her prescription. And I was able to get about $400 of it covered through my insurance, but had to pay the other $400 out of pocket. My son, thankfully, that generic one came on, and we were able to get that one fully covered. But I'm just concerned about the rising costs of this. I know EpiPen had a recall a couple of years ago, and there was, I think, a senator's daughter who was in charge of the EpiPen company. And I'm just worried about all of this rising cost for a life-threatening drug or life-threatening medication that our children need. And what does it mean for those of us that rely on the ACA or Medicaid parents that need this drug for their children?
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Carmen. Dr. Wachs?
That is an ongoing issue that we struggle with every day. And unfortunately, from the medical field, although we try to put pressure on the government and on the manufacturers to make it more available to the patients who need it but may not be able to afford it. One thing that you did mention, which is a great benefit that's just come out, is the generic version, because insurance companies, as you know, both government insurances and commercial insurances will be more quick to cover the cost of a generic. I think that will help ease that burden. But from the medical societies and whatnot, we are as concerned and outraged about the price of the EpiPen. And the AVQ for those who have commercial insurance is they've made a statement basically that they will it will be available for all patients with commercial insurance at zero cost, which I know is not helpful to those on state insurances. However, will hopefully ease the burden as well.
So that's if you have insurance through your workplace or
any of the commercial non-state or government-run insurance. And so it does not cover Medicaid, Medicare, those plans.
And what's the cost generally for folks who do have Medicare and Medicaid?
To be honest, I don't know. I have very accurate information. I know that I've heard patients say that they've paid anywhere from $300 to $400 for a two-pack of epinephrine.
Wow. Let's go to a break. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866, or you can join the conversation also on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9. Back in a minute.
Surveys confirm that volunteering offers real benefits for people. Donating time and effort to a good cause often provides people with a sense of purpose. On the other end, some nonprofit groups depend on volunteers for their daily operation. Join us on the next Native America Calling and tell us what volunteering means to you and your Native community.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Starting Saturday, September 22nd through Friday the 28th, KUNM needs people who can talk on the phone and type into a computer at the same time. We also need people with good handwriting and a pleasant phone voice. We provide training you can access at home, plus free parking, free CDs, food, and snacks all day. Sign up at KUNM.org, click Help Answer Phones, and find your preferred shift. Thanks.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. We're talking about anaphylactic food allergies and managing them in school. Does your kid have a severe food allergy? What kinds of responses have you gotten when you bring it up with school staff? What was that like? Join the conversation, 1-877-899-5866. In the studio, I have Ivy Rizzo, an advocate with the Anaphylactic Food Allergy Support Group of New Mexico. Stephanie Collins, also involved in that group, right?
Right.
And a parent. And Dr. Richard Walks. And so we've been talking about how to access medications like EpiPens. I want to hear a little bit more about the experiences y'all have had in schools. Stephanie, what's the most helpful response you've received from a school admin or a teacher?
So our principal is really wonderful. He made our classroom food free. So there was not that concern that my kid's allergen was sitting right next to them while they're trying to concentrate and focus on their work or learn. So that was extremely helpful. And then also being able to educate the classroom. So one parent brought in hand sanitizer with glitter that was colored, and we had volunteers. We had like four little kids line up, and we put some hand sanitizer on the first child. They rubbed their hand, went to shake hands with the other kids, and it showed the remnants, like it could be peanut butter or milk, and it showed how easy it was to pass along. So we made our children allergy aware or food allergy aware. So it was really wonderful how helpful our school has been at letting us educate the children, the parents, and just being supportive.
So you actually spend a lot of time there as a parent.
Right.
And what school is that?
The New Mexico International School.
Okay. And Emma Clapp on the line, who developed a shellfish allergy in high school. Do you have anything to share about responses from school staff that were helpful to you or unhelpful?
I think the biggest thing kind of goes back to that, you know, that singling out. And I think schools are getting a lot better at, you know, recognizing students with allergies and sort of trying to accommodate those needs. And I think that's very important and a step in the right direction. But I do remember myself and have heard from friends and family with younger children that there are still some practices in place where, you know, a teacher might say, oh, well, we're having a day where the whole class is bringing in like a food from their heritage. And so your child can just stay home, or your child might come into contact with something they're allergic to on a field trip. So your child should just stay home. And while I understand the, you know, the safety aspect of why people have this mindset, I think what we should be doing at this point is, you know, how do we make this feel like an inclusive space? Schools should be a place where all kids are actively participating if and when they want to. So I think for me, the best things were when teachers acknowledged the allergy that I had, but also instead of accommodating just for my needs, sort of accommodated so the whole class was doing whatever sort of fit the health requirement that I had.
Thanks for that perspective about inclusion. That's a really good point. Nicole is on the line from Albuquerque. Nicole, welcome to the conversation.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, you're on air.
I wanted to share, I have a daughter who's nearly 14 who has a severe wheat gluten allergy. And while products, gluten-free products, have become much more readily available over the last decade, it seems to me that the general knowledge about food allergies has not. And I think both in schools and at restaurants, it's increasingly difficult to get people to understand the severity of her allergy. Things like cross-contamination, a lot of times people think it's a preference or a choice, which obviously it's not. And things like gluten-free menus versus gluten-friendly menus have really confused, I believe, the conversation, because it seems to be increasingly with restaurants also a liability issue, where they just, rather than understanding, you know, how to accommodate gluten-free eaters, they say, well, we have this gluten-free menu, which, you know, we'll have gluten-free items, but the homework isn't done in terms of cross-contamination also for things like seasoning, right, where they might serve chicken or broccoli, but they've seasoned it in soy sauce, and therefore it's no longer gluten-free. So we've run into lots of instances where she has gotten sick, sometimes moderately, sometimes severely, because we were eating off of what we thought was a gluten-free menu or in a place that had some understanding, and then it turned out by her reaction that clearly wasn't the case. So it's been frustrating. I think it has generated in my daughter a hypersensitivity to eating out. And like the other sort of speaker was saying, she'll often say that she's eaten or that she's not hungry simply because she's unsure of the food environment that she's in.
Thanks for sharing that, Nicole. And Ivy, what do you have to say to that? I mean, there's so many different kinds of allergies or things that people talk about as an allergy. How do you talk to people about the differences?
Yeah, so I don't know what she's going through. It sounds like she's going through a really hard thing, and I definitely can appreciate what she's saying. So there is a difference between intolerances and anaphylactic food allergies. And, you know, I can only speak to anaphylactic food allergies, but I do know that intolerances can be very difficult. When I try to explain to a lay person what the difference between what we call an intolerance is and an anaphylactic food allergy, what I say to simplify it is that with anaphylactic food allergies, we're talking about quick response. The body responds fairly quickly, within minutes to a few hours. Whereas with intolerances, you usually see what allergists would call like a delayed reaction. So it can happen, you know, within a a few hours to a few days. And then I talk about the area of the body. So with anaphylactic food allergies, we're really concerned with this kind of systemic meltdown that happens with anaphylaxis. So we're seeing symptoms in multiple parts of the area of the body, like many hives in the face, and they're vomiting. So you have two different symptoms, where systems in place. Whereas with intolerances, you're usually looking at one area of the body. So people will often say, I get really bad stomach and digestive issues, or I have headaches. Dr. Wachs might be able to explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's a very excellent explanation of the difference between intolerance and anaphylactic type reactions. Anaphylactic reactions are based on the immunoglobulin IgE. And that's a very specific type of food allergy. When we talk about food allergy, it falls under a much larger umbrella of adverse reactions to foods. And that can stem everything from anaphylactic to I get drunk if I drink too much alcohol. It's both are reactions to food, but it's a question of mechanism and severity. What we've been talking about today with anaphylactic type food allergies are very specifically IgE mediated type reactions. The caller who called in talking about celiac, specifically celiac disease, is a type of allergy, but it is not IgE mediated. The reactions can be severe, but are not life threatening. And when we're talking about anaphylactic reactions, we're talking about life threatening. Now, that is not to belittle the caller's situation at all. She has a very difficult time of it. Sounds like her daughter has very sensitive reactions to even small amounts of gluten, which can happen as well. So her point about going to restaurants is just as valid. The biggest difference that I see is when we're dealing with the anaphylactic type reaction, it's truly a life-threatening situation as opposed to a life-affecting reaction.
Thanks for breaking that down. And Ivy, you also mentioned earlier, you know, when we talk about food, it can be really personal and it can be really people, you know, react in different ways. And so there's a lot of like stereotypes and social misconceptions around it, too. I mean, what are those like stereotypes that you run into that you have to try to educate people about?
Yeah. So we hear a lot, you're being weak or you want to be treated especially, and actually these kids are super strong. They've had to deal with the idea of death at a much younger age than most kids do. And they don't want attention most of the time. They actually just want to fit in. And food is everywhere. It's such a part of how we communicate our love. In New Mexico, food is one of our biggest and greatest traditions. So figuring out a way to keep these kids safe and included requires kind of a team effort from everybody involved. And I think really as parents of children with food allergies, we want your compassion, and we want to know that our kids are going to be safe, and we want to help. Like, we want to give you the support. So one thing that the caller had mentioned was how difficult it is to eat at restaurants. Well, one thing that we do is we have chef cards. And so if you're invited to eat out with your family and you don't want to miss that emotional connection and bonding, you can bring a chef card, and you have a chef on the chef card. You say, this is a life-threatening food allergy. This is what the food is. Feel free to come out and talk to us from the kitchen. Let us know if you have any questions, so that there's that card. And that might make family bonding a little easier. Okay, I can still go out to eat at this restaurant because I have a tool. So that's what our group, Anaphylactic Food Allergy Support New Mexico, does, is we provide connection and tools to make it through these emotional processes.
And I think there are stereotypes, too, that allergies only affect certain types of kids, right?
White kids, white rich kids. And unfortunately, that is so far from the truth. This year, when I look back mentally at the deaths that we've seen, I see a lot of children of color. I see children who are not economically advantaged. But there is this stereotype, and I hear it from Hispanic families who say, oh, that's a white person thing. And then I see all of these kids who are Hispanic who have food allergies. And one case was a child in Brooklyn. This was actually a little black boy named Elijah. And his story was just horrible. The teachers knew that he had a food allergy, and yet they gave him a grilled cheese. And then he spit it up. And so the teachers told his parents, oh, no, he didn't eat anything, and he died. So for people to have this mental vision of it being white rich kids, just because it's usually white wealthy parents who make or have the resources to make the biggest, I won't say stink, the biggest advocacy impact, maybe, does not, it doesn't bear out in real life. And we need to be keeping an eye out for these communities. The Navajo Nation has one of the largest asthma issues in our state. We have families from, you know, the Asian American community, they're more likely to have food allergies than the white community. Same with black children, have a higher risk of food allergies and asthma. So, yeah, that's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And Elizabeth is on the line from Santa Fe. Elizabeth, thanks for calling. What's your comment?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that in the schools, I worked in the schools for 7 years, and that if the parents can somehow go to the classrooms, and I know, you know, they shouldn't have to, but it's very effective. Many times I was in a classroom with a child with a severe allergy, and the child maybe would say something, maybe wouldn't say something. The office wouldn't tell me, but the other kids in the classroom would be an advocate for them. And I don't know how they were educated so that they knew, but I thought it was really interesting that, you know, it's supposed to be the adults who are helping these kids in their circumstance, but the kids in the classroom, if they were on board, they would be the ones who say, don't eat that, she has an allergy. And so I just thought that was, you know, it was really interesting to me that that is who ended up being the person that would give me the information, even though, you know, supposedly the office knew, blah, blah, blah. The amount of information that you got from the kids was much better. So if, you know, somehow the kids are the ones that need to be educated, the other kids in the classroom. So that's all I have to say. I can't hear you.
Thanks for that, Elizabeth. Dr. Wax, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent statement, and I've seen that as well. We'd mentioned earlier about bullying. In my experience, I've actually seen more bullying coming from the adults in these children's lives than their peers. I've found that one of the greatest supports that these kids have found is in their classmates, because they're growing up in a generation who recognize it and know it's real, and they look out for each other. A lot of the times where one kid will watch out for their classmate and point out to a teacher, wait, you can't give them that, it has milk in it, or Mary spilt milk over there, can we get Johnny out of here? It's been amazing.
The kids are all right. We've got just about a half minute, but Stephanie, any final thoughts about what is most helpful in schools, or what advice you have for parents or teachers out there that may be just learning about this?
I guess the best advice is just talking to the kids talking to their friends, sharing their experiences. We've been really lucky. We've had similar experiences where they'll say, oh, there's nuts around here. You know, you don't want to come near here. Let's protect our friend. They always say our friend. So it's pretty nice just, you know, talking to them and informing them, because they want to help their friends.
And Ivy, just real quick, how to find that Facebook group?
Yeah, so we're Anaphylactic Food Allergy Support New Mexico, but it's NM Food Allergy Support Group. Thank you.
All right. That's all the time we have. Thank you to everyone who called in. Thanks to our guests, Ivy Rizzo, Stephanie Collins, Dr. Richard Wax, and Emma Clapp. The conversation does not have to end here. You can use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. I'll also post some resources that we mentioned here on the web post, KUNM.org. Next time on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll look at opportunities and challenges for remote workers across the state. That's next Thursday morning. If you missed part of the show today, you can listen on our website, KUNM.org, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Thank you to the D-Numbers in Santa Fe for letting us use their song as our theme music. Our engineers, Marino Spencer, Celia Rainey screened your calls. Marisa DeMarco live tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.